so much of the technology that we are immersed in today and taking for granted and thinking that this is like, this is how life is, will evaporate in the next 5-10 years.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof.
So the conversation you'll hear today, and first off, apologies for the slight laryngitis I'm getting over, but that just shows you guys how much I love you. Really want to share this conversation I had with Stefan Spencer. He's a 3-time author. He's a major blogger, international speaker, and he's a consultant on all things related to SEO, because he is one of the guys to speak to on the planet when it comes to SEO. He now shares his wisdom and expertise with others, especially on his 2 weekly podcasts, Marketing Speak, which I was on recently, shameless plug, as well as The Optimized Geek. We have a great wide-ranging conversation, and some of the topics you're going to hear about is how full-blown AI will impact the future of search, why the future of search isn't linear but is exponential, how voice is going to impact search, and why ranking number 2 may not even matter anymore, moonshots and how to incentivize people towards the long term and not the short term, why you can't fool Google any longer as an SEO expert, and why featured snippets are important to the future of SEO. So it's a wide-ranging conversation, very fascinating guy I think you'll enjoy. And Stefan, let's take it away.
Yeah, so Stefan Spencer, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. And, I really wanted to talk to you because of your deep interest in futurism and also being a subject matter expert on where SEO is right now. I mean, first off, I heard this outlandish statement recently, like, is SEO dead? And I think that's ridiculous. But I mean, you tell me, is SEO dead in any way, shape or form?
No, but the old guard of SEO practitioners who are focused on things that worked 10 years ago and not thinking about where the future is heading and machine learning or full-blown AI, they're going to be left behind, right? Because the future of SEO is all about AI. On Google's side, they're going to be relying more and more heavily on AI. They're already relying heavily on machine learning, which is, an aspect of AI, kind of more fundamental, foundational level. But when, let's say, an AI can determine better than a human the quality of an article, how well written it is, how credible it is, how trustworthy it is, and how trustworthy and credible the source is and sources, that's going to be a whole new ball game. And, I say the only way to, well, actually, let me pose this as a question. What do you think the only way to beat an AI is in regards to SEO or anything? But let's take just SEO as example here. What's the only way to beat an AI at SEO? Like the Google AI?
I mean, that's a great question. I love that you're asking it. I mean, I would say build a better AI.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. Exactly. Have another AI. Because without AI on our end as SEOs, we're going to have a very hard time keeping up with the Google algorithm. Even Google engineers won't know what's baked into the algorithm that they had originally coded, because it's self-learning. It figures it out on its own, what the signals are that matter and which ones no longer matter.
I mean, and I think it's great that you talk about this from a position of a very long history with SEO, because, I mean, I remember when one of my first internships, I was dropping URLs of real estate listings directly into like 15 engines manually. And it was, there were like 15 back then, you know, like InfoSeek, Excite, Lycos, whatever. I mean, and I feel like you've been...
You're really dating yourself, yes.
Right. And I feel like I seem to recall that you have that level of extensive experience, you know. So what do you think, yeah. I mean, how valuable has it been for you to try to figure out what the future of SEO looks like, given that you've had this long history? How does that long history give you perspective in terms of where things are going?
Well, it doesn't operate inside of a vacuum. I mean, if I only looked historically at where things have been to extrapolate where things are going, I'd be a dinosaur, because our brains naturally gravitate towards linear thinking. We extrapolate linearly, which is a problem because of the law of accelerating returns and exponential technologies and so forth. We need to recognize that this is not a linear trajectory here. This is exponential. So the speed that we will be quickly coming to full-blown AI that is artificial general intelligence is mind-blowing. So in that kind of context, we need to think about where are we extrapolating our future into. And so it does help that I have a long history with regards to SEO. But I think it's unnecessary. Somebody who's getting into the game now, they don't have any prior experience, but they are hungry to learn and they have exponential thinking. They could surpass somebody who's been in this space for 20 years if that person is not exponentially minded. So that's, I think, an important distinction and a way to frame this that I found very profound and powerful. I learned this from Ray Kurzweil. He explained that at today's rate of, okay, so today's rate of change is much faster than the rate of change 100 years ago. So if we look back 100 years ago, I think what happened to just in daily life, and imagine putting yourself back into that time period with all your gadgets and your behavior patterns and so forth. You're walking down the street, you've got these earbuds sticking out of your ear, and you're just talking like you're talking to yourself, like you're crazy. But you're actually talking to somebody halfway around the world on your iPhone, which is in your pocket. That's pretty cool. But it's pretty normal for us. It would look like science fiction. It would look like you're crazy or you're an alien if it was 100 years ago. Think now to where we are today and extrapolate forward, but we don't have to extrapolate forward 100 years because things are increasing at an exponentially faster rate. So at today's rate of change versus 100 years ago, quite a difference there. At today's rate of change, if we extrapolate that linearly outward, the last 100 years would in technological evolution would fit into the next 20 years. But because it's continuing to accelerate, it's not going to fit in the next 20 years. It's going to fit into the next 12.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, because we kind of get used to what is the new normal with respect to any new technology, such as, you know, when we're thinking about SEO, we start to get, I feel like, very comfortable about this is the way that we should be operating within a certain regime. And then what happens is their, you know, voice shows up and there are all these new interfaces. You know, I'm thinking kind of like different Alexa enabled devices that Amazon has now. And I feel like all of those impact the way that one has to think about SEO. I mean, if you are, for some of these situations, if you're not in the top result or top three results, it might not matter because the eighth result in certain interfaces might not exist anymore. So, I mean, how do you...
Well, even number two might not exist anymore. In fact, I don't think it will. When you ask Google or Alexa or Siri for an answer, you want the answer. You don't want five options, right? So here's listing number one, here's listing number two, here's listing number three. Okay, stop, Alexa, I'm done. That's fine. I got my answer. No, I want the answer. And it's not just for very factual things, how tall is the Eiffel Tower and so forth. I want to know what is the best piece of technology to buy, and then I want to get it, Amazon Prime, 2-day shipping, right? With just a few words. And that's only scratching the surface. We've got to think of this in a larger context, because if you think about the advent of the GUI, the graphical user interface, that revolutionized everything, right? As far as computing, we were typing at the C prompt, you know, on DOS and on Unix and stuff. And people, it's funny when I hear people refer to backslash and they're reading off a URL or something, like, oh, that's an old school person that used to type stuff into the DOS prompt. So the advent of the GUI revolutionized everything. The advent of the LUI, the linguistic user interface, is going to revolutionize everything yet again, to an even greater extent. You know, so think about the advent of Windows and of the Apple Macintosh and how world-changing that was. I'd say at least double that. And that's what's coming very, very quickly down the pike. It's so inefficient for us to be typing onto our computers and certainly typing onto devices, like little devices.
Oh, my God. This is a thing that I've been telling people for a while, which is that keyboards were essentially a crutch because what's natural is talking to one another, and there wasn't a way to talk and then get that information into a computer, you know? So that's why I think voice will dominate, because keyboards were a necessary evil. And there are people who are our age who think of keyboards as this be all end all, and they're going to be so sad when they go away. But the reality is, it was this unnatural thing that we had to do because we, you know, had to interact with a computer, and that was the only way to do it. So, yeah, I think.
Yeah. So RSI, repetitive stress injury from typing too much, it's going to be a thing of the past. It's going to be as bizarre. The keyboards will be as bizarre as buggy whips. Like, it's a running joke, like, oh, that's a buggy whip manufacturer. You know, they're going to be obsolete. So much of the technology that we are immersed in today and taking for granted and thinking that this is how life is will evaporate in the next 5-10 years.
And some of it for the better. I mean, I think it's two steps forward, one step back, often. But let me ask you, so let me just jump into our very random lightning round very quickly. So everything that's somewhat off topic, and you got to answer in about 8 seconds or so if you can. You ready?
Sure.
So as a fellow podcaster, I got to ask you, last podcast that you've listened to?
Well, I don't know that I would call it a quote-unquote podcast, but it was the interview by Peter Diamandis of Ray Kurzweil that Peter put out on Abundance Digital. So it had video as well, and I think he called it a webinar, but I listened to it in the car just like it was a podcast. So
I think that counts, you know. So
I think so too.
So you've had to travel like me to speak often at a whole bunch of random places. I'm sure you've had to find a random favorite fast food joint for when you're on the road. So what would that be?
Well, I'm a vegetarian, so that's always a tricky thing for me.
I go to Arby's and they have really good fries.
Oh, really? I avoid fast food because it's really unhealthy. I'm a biohacker, so I won't eat at fast food places.
I admire your ability. Well, in that case, what would be the next best thing? What would you gravitate to instead? And I envy your discipline.
I'll use Yelp or TripAdvisor or whatever is the local app for finding good vegetarian food.
Yeah, good call. And how about this? One thing you'd want to do before you die?
Oh, my goodness. there's so many things. I want to have a New York Times best-selling book on self-help.
Nice. I like that. Personal
transformation specifically. That's my focus for the self-help movement.
I will be one of the first to pick it up. Okay, cool. And then dovetailing a little bit back towards SEO, what's the SEO myth that annoys you the most? Because I've heard a lot of misinformation out there. What's something you've heard that just drives you crazy?
I just don't understand people still talking about are things like keyword density and meta keywords tags and stuff that actually never counted in Google, like meta keywords never counted in Google. And when I still hear those things, I cringe. Like, this person was never a good SEO.
You know, why is that though? Because I got to say, one thing that's kind of interesting to me is if you're going to apply to a college, generally speaking, they will tell you what the criteria are that they are looking for. And it seems that SEO is this interesting thing in that it's kind of a, you know, black box, and kind of people will tell you what's important when you're trying to develop quality content. But also there are a lot of rumors out there. There's a lot of myths, and sometimes people overstate things that were important 6 years ago but aren't important anymore. I mean, why do you think SEO has evolved into this murky thing that nobody quite 100% understands?
Well, I think it has to do with the fact it's harder to predict. When you're doing pay-per-click, for example, you get immediate, really, feedback. Get real-time feedback. And with SEO, Google doesn't want to reward spammers for getting too close to the line and then backing off right before they cross that line of what's spam. So they don't want to give immediate feedback. They make it take a lot longer for you to see the results of things that you're doing. So you can't do very fast tests. And so it kind of stymies our use of the scientific method to test things, have hypotheses, run tests, have control groups, all that. Like, how do you run a test in parallel with SEO? You can't. And when the feedback that you get takes so long, unnaturally long, because Google is drawing it out, makes it very hard to be scientific about SEO.
So do you, because I was thinking that's probably why, I mean, I'm always surprised by the number of companies that don't take SEO strategy seriously, despite the fact that it's very clearly something that an organization is going to get outsized returns if they focus on. I mean, I think ultimately you are selling something, you're providing some type of service, and getting the right people to see the right page or, you know, a portion of your app or whatever, just being exposed to your brand at the right time is critical. So, I mean, why do you think, and or are you surprised by the number of companies who still don't take SEO as seriously as they should?
I'm not at all surprised. Companies by design are very short-term focused. They're interested in making the numbers for the next quarter.
So when you're operating that kind of environment, you've got to be short-term focused and all about hitting the immediate numbers. And if you don't have that kind of a view screen into where things are heading from an SEO perspective that you get with pay-per-click and other paid media, that's very frustrating. And, you know, the expression, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. In this case, it's a bird in the hand is worth 10 in the bush. They'd much prefer the one bird in the hand than the 10 in the bush, which would be the SEO and the 10x improvements. And it's an asset. It's not just with pay-per-click, you stop spending money and then you stop receiving the benefit. It's immediate. Whereas with SEO, you stop doing link building or you stop doing technical SEO changes and you have improved that asset. And it continues to pay dividends month after month, year after year, even if you've stopped doing anything, which is pretty exciting. And yet these short-term focused companies like, yeah, we're not going to go there. We're not going to invest, or we're going to invest a fraction of what we invest in pay-per-click into SEO. It's very short-term focused.
The fact that nobody's incentivized towards thinking long-term, because everybody, I mean, and frankly, at Firebrand, we've consulted with clients, I don't mind saying, where there's something less important, but more time constrained. It has to happen now. And then there are these mission critical long-term objectives for the organization. And it seems that every day when people are trying to build a, you know, better, brighter future for their company, they get stymied by, but this has to happen today. And as a result, we all become very short-term focused instead of thinking about what's going to generate the most benefit in the long run.
Yeah, I there's more to it than that, though. I think people are too certainty-driven. I learned this from hearing a talk with the head of Moonshots. I forget his exact title, but the head of Moonshots at Google. And he was describing how CEOs, when given the choice between being a 1 out of 100 chance to hit $1 billion in the next year, or being 100% guaranteed of an extra $1 million this year, that they'll by far choose the moonshot of like, okay, $1 billion, let's roll the dice. Let's go for it. And then you ask executives the next level down from the CEO that report directly to the CEO the same question. And by far they answer, I'll just take the $1 million.
I mean, I would take the this million. That's
what's broken with the world.
Yeah.
Because it's all about certainty. I just think that if we can be more willing to shoot for the moon and be okay with the likelihood we will not succeed, but we're gonna go big or go home. That's gonna make a whole new world for us. It's gonna be amazing. It's how we're gonna solve all the big problems and the carbon dioxide and the climate change and all that sort of stuff. It's the moonshot.
That's why I think often whenever we're advising people, and I'm talking to folks about how to structure these types of incentives in an organization, is you have, like, let's say a long-term digital center of excellence, and you incentivize them in one way. Their goals are a certain thing. And then you have a group that's responsible for short-term execution, and you incentivize them another way. But what you can't do is have that same person in charge of kind of making a short-term move or a long-term move on any given day. You can't basically lump those into the same role, because then the incentives get kind of muddy and everybody's incentivized towards that short-term move because they're not even sure if, frankly, they're going to be able to keep their job long enough to see the benefits of the long-term move that they're making simultaneously. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, makes sense.
So we're talking a lot about how the SEO landscape has changed since, you know, the Art of SEO came out. And I guess it's been a few editions now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Third edition. Nice. We need to start work on the fourth.
Yeah, because it keeps on evolving.
It's so much work. So much work. Yeah. And it keeps growing. It's 1,000 pages now, 994 pages. But we've been advised by our publisher, O'Reilly, that we cannot make it bigger. It has to actually be a lot smaller. It's a great textbook, and it actually is used as a textbook in universities. But when I hand a copy of this 994-page book to somebody, they're like, oh, wow, can I just hire you? And I'm like, of course. It's like, it's a very effective big business card. But it's daunting for somebody who wants to learn.
I mean, for sure.
So we'll probably come out with a 600, 700 page fourth edition, but we're probably a year out from that.
Nice. So
yet.
I can't wait till that does come out, because I think that since it's evolving so quickly, part of me thinks, and this is, you're more of the expert in this area, but I just kind of think that there was a day where essentially your job was to try to fool Google as an SEO expert. You could do that to some extent, and that was a while ago. I don't think that now it makes any sense to try to trick or hack things. I think it makes a lot more sense to have a strong, effective, for instance, content strategy. I've seen a lot of people who work on link building, but don't work on the content quality so that nobody wants to link to what you're putting up there, you know? So I just feel that now we're seeing more and more of a convergence of strong, solid content marketing fundamentals and SEO versus the gamesmanship that maybe a few years ago was more prevalent. But please tell me if I'm wrong. I'm totally open to that.
Well, at least the people that I tried to sway and successfully did so years and years ago got away from the gaming way back when, because it's never a sustainable strategy to try to outgame a very well-resourced business like Google. Like, it's very short-term thinking. If you think about, like, way back in the day, you could get away with a ton of stuff. If you were to have projected into the future Google's AI and all that could reverse engineer all your tactics and things that you had done over the years to ascertain your proclivities to spamming, right? So what's the best indicator of future behavior?
I mean, that's just looking at the past behavior and analyzing it.
Past behavior, exactly. Best indicator of future behavior is past behavior. So if Google sees a tendency to spamming the search engines, then you are likely to get a penalty or to be looked at in a different way by the algorithms of the future, even if you're getting away with it now, right? And so I always took that long view, and I was squeaky clean, you know, pearly white hat from the beginning, because I knew that this was going to end this way. You're providing a footprint to Google. You're providing data for a rap sheet. And you better believe Google has a rap sheet on every one of us, and as content producers, not just our websites, but us as humans, because we're the spammers that choose to spam on different websites. Like, it's the criminal gets followed around. It's not studying the venues. Like, there are certain bad neighborhoods that a lot of crime happens. It's not about the neighborhood. It's about the criminals and their choices. So some people, even in a bad neighborhood, they see broken windows and graffiti everywhere, and they're not inclined to break into a store and steal a bunch of stuff. But somebody who has that proclivity would be like, oh, yeah, this neighborhood's not being looked after, and there's something I can steal. So it's the same sort of thing. If you build that kind of reputation for yourself, and you better believe that if you think that you're, well, let's take a hypothetical. Let's say somebody does negative SEO on your site, and this is a real thing. You could have your site's reputation in Google sullied by a competitor, a spammer who wants to outrank you, and
so like results being just framed, hurt kind you. Of.
Yeah, yeah. But if you're being framed and you have a history of like you're an ex-con or something, you're going to have a hard time convincing the powers that be that you're innocent. Whereas if you've kept your nose clean the whole time, it's a lot easier. And you're convincing not humans now, you're convincing algorithms.
So why, I got to say, I mean, why is it that the two shadiest industries or professions in the world are SEO and politics? It seems like that to me. You seem to have a consistent knack for trying to figure out, well, if thing A happens, then that will lead to thing B, which will result in thing C. And I think that that's why you're such a sharp voice in terms of where things are going with SEO. So what do you think, and this is probably my last nerdy SEO question, but where do you think the world of SEO, how might it look different 36 months from now? Next time, let's say you're on 3 years from now, and it's going to look really different, but what will be the things that will feel and look the most different given how rapidly things are evolving?
Yeah, I think featured snippets and voice search will be a key part of the conversations. I talk about featured snippets a lot. I write articles for Search Engine Land and so forth on this topic. And this is the gateway to voice search. If you're the featured snippet, which is the instant answer to a query, that's preempting all the regular organic results, you're going to be the voice answer. So that needs to be a key focus for people, because we're moving towards that world of the LUI, linguistic user interface, being more popular than typing. And that's just a very small part of the whole picture. We're going to be utilizing machine learning algorithms a lot more to do things like map redirects. Like, okay, we're making huge changes in our site, and we want to make sure everything like we're changing the whole platform. All the URLs are changing. We want to make sure everything is mapped correctly. Or let's say that we are trying to figure out what content to write for our website based on keyword research and so forth. They're going to use machine learning to find the best topics to write about. And we're going to use machine learning to score how good the article is, not just readability and keyword usage and all that sort of stuff, but is this an insightful article? Does it have surprise and delight baked into the article? Does it have a story arc? Is there something counterintuitive about it that makes somebody do a double take, especially in the headline and so forth? We're at such a baseline starting point right now. There are tools that give you a little indication of if you're on the right track or not, like the co-schedule headline analyzer is a fun little tool, but it's not based on machine learning. Once we have tools that are based on machine learning, that are expert systems better than humans at ascertaining if we've had a good story arc to the article, whether the headline has got mystery, surprise, counterintuitiveness, or some sort of double take, that's going to be amazing. We're going to have a brave new world, and so much more is going to be possible in terms of quality and quantity, the ability to scale, to semi-automate. It's going to be pretty interesting. And that's just, I'd say 36 months away.
Why I always feel kind of blessed to live in this very interesting time where things are moving so quickly that it's hard to keep up, but it's fun to try to rise to the challenge. So I'm a big fan of that. So the last thing, what's the most exciting thing that you're working on now that that people should know about? Besides, that I know you talked about that fourth edition, but that's a whiles off. So what's something that's a little bit more, front and center right now?
Well, I'm building out a library of online courses and a membership site. So I'm very excited about that. That's all at stephanspencer.com.
Stephan, thanks so much. Really appreciate you making the time for us today.
Well, yeah, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And thank you so much, Stephan. I told you he was great, guys. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever finer podcasts are sold. All of your support means a lot, and that helps other people find this podcast. They will love you forever. Until next time, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.